right, Coastsiders, let's get right to it. It's Friday, January 10, 2020. Put on your work boots and grab a Pulaski. It's time for some coastal windage. Mojo, good morning.
Can I ask, what's a Pulaski?
Yeah, you can ask, what's a Pulaski. Right, let me look it up here for a second. No, a Pulaski is a, I'm going to say it's a pick-like trail working tool. It kind of look. It has like a spiked saw.
Oh.
It's kind of like a pick.
Okay, I was thinking some kind of pastry.
Oh, that, that shows where your mind is at. Yes. No, a Pulaski is a trail working tool, and we're going, I think we're going to get into trail working and maybe tools later in the show, so
okay.
We'll be working on that.
Pick up your
that's right, folks. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast side's number one live. Call in talk radio show. We're here every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on KHMB Radio, 100.9 FM and Rockin' 1710 a.m. streaming live on KHMBRadio.com. Coastside issues, hot topics, and you and us. I'm Ruben Truthmaker, mid-coaster, dad, futurist, and passionate iconoclast for the greater good. That's right. And with me this morning, as always, Mr. Mojo Filters. Mojo.
Yeah, I'm here with my dictionary so I can understand what you just said.
Okay, well, share it with me because I literally have no idea what I'm saying most of the time, as you know, listeners.
It makes sense.
Libby is on vacation today. Libby, take care. We'll see you next week because next week we have our big Shooting the Breeze live interview segment with Jenny Urban and Lili Keaton of Say Yes to the Dress. That's next week, next Friday, 9 a.m. right here, right then. Mark that date. You're going to want to hear. We had Jenny Urban on the show last year for their first time they were doing Say Yes to the Dress, which is an amazing program in which they offer free formal wear to high school students who are going, high school girls who are going to formal dances, help them with the makeup and the jewelry. The dresses are free. They're amazing dresses. It's an amazing program, and we're going to hear more about it next week when Libby returns. Okay. This is a live call-in talk radio show for and about the Coastside. So, the key part of it is you, Coastsider. So, go ahead and give us a call on anything you want to talk about, including today's topics, which we will get to in a second. That number, write it down. Write it down. Does anybody write anything anymore? Type it into your personal device. 650, that's the area code here. But we do have many listeners from out of the area code, so we need to provide that. 650-560-9851. That is the number, 560-9851. Or send us an email at coastalwindage@gmail.com. Now, of course, you can always listen on the Internet at khmbradio.com. Click the Listen Live button, and you are listening to our live show right now anywhere in the world with an Internet connection. Okay, Mojo, exciting doings this weekend. It's the 28th Annual Coastal Repertory Coastside's Got Talent Show.
Oh.
7 o'clock at the Coastal Rep Theater in Half Moon Bay. Now, I checked on tickets last night at the Coastal Rep website. There's still 41 seats left, including a couple of accessible seats, $15 for children, $20 for adults. But the big question I have, Mojo.
Yeah.
If you were to perform in this talent show, what would be your act?
Is it solo or is it like a...
And you could have a group, you know, an ensemble, you could go solo.
And how long do you get?
Like whatever, I think probably, you know, less than 5 minutes or 10 minutes.
I think I just walk out there and see what happens.
Ooh.
What do you call that?
Improv?
Yeah. You can't plan improv.
But would you be singing, playing an instrument? Would you just be talking the improv? I mean, just start telling jokes?
I take some drums, make it very difficult for everybody to put them up, take them down.
Kind of a Maynard Krebs beatnik drum.
Who's Maynard Krebs?
Who's Maynard Krebs?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Is that Dobie Gillis kind of guy? Is that what his name was, really?
Uh-huh.
I know him as Gilligan.
Yeah, except Bob Denver.
Yeah.
As the goofy beatnik in Dobie Gillis.
And his name was Maynard.
Maynard Krebs.
I know the name, but I had no idea that who it was. Actually, I'd probably... I like acoustic guitar. That's an easy one.
I thought it would be an easy answer for you. I thought you would say I would play some music.
I was trying to make it more difficult than it really is.
Okay,
honestly.
Now that kind of annoys me, Mojo, because you have several skills that I feel like you could walk out on stage and do, including your music. I sat here last night as I was putting the show together, thinking about what my answer would be, and I literally cannot think of one single thing that I could do in front of people that would be entertaining, kind of like this show. But and it just made me sad. After a few decades on this planet, it seems like everybody would have picked up some skill that people would be interested in seeing performed, and I guess I have some skills. However, none of them have any value on the open market.
You know what's a good one, believe it or not? Magic. Magic tricks. A lot of people got... Well, you know, show some cards. That's how Steve Martin got started, really, at Disney.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Johnny Carson, magician. They're all magicians, got it made, really. That's what I do. I'd go learn a magic trick, and I'd get up there. And
You got to have deft hands and it takes skill to become a magician, because you really got to hone your craft there. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm old now. Like, I don't have time to hone a new craft. You'd think just by accident you would have accumulated something that you could do on stage for 5 minutes that people would at least sit there for 5 minutes and go, all right. But I literally can think of nothing. So, again, I guess that's why I'm in radio. Anyway. If you can think of anything, please let me know, because this will be troubling me for a while. Listeners, if any of you know a Reuben Truthmaker, myself out there, and you can think of anything I could do at the talent show, give us a call. Let me know, please. This is troubling my mind. 560-9851. All right. let's clear the mind and get into the topics for today's show. So, King Tides this weekend. Now, that's something to talk about and look out for.
Where are they playing?
Right.
Ba-dum-ba.
They're playing this big amphitheater out here to the west. And also a huge, and I mean huge, turnout for the MCC meeting this past Wednesday night. Related to that is our main segment, Pump Track Madness, Madness, Madness. And we didn't get to this last week, so we are definitely doing it this week. Why? Little free libraries. Okay. Give us a call, listeners, 560-9851, coastalwindage@gmail.com if you don't want to talk on the air. And now we get to the really critical information that this show provides, that no show anywhere else, nowhere else will you get this exact information about air quality. Okay, traffic, weather, yawn. This is air quality. We get this info from airnow.gov. Okay, air quality, 0 to 50 is excellent, 51 to 100 is good. Today, in Half Moon Bay and Moss Beach, the air quality is 23, which is fantastic. It was 58 last week, so much better. But Redwood City, coming in strong. It was 38 there last week. Today in Redwood City, go get a big gulp of this, 13. Air quality, 13 in Redwood City. That is outstanding. Down in Santa Cruz, it's only 27 today. It was 23 last week. And we hear it's about 10,000 in Australia right now.
Yeah.
Would not want to be down in the Southern Hemisphere right now. They said it's like, it's kind of like the up in the paradise last year where the air quality was over 800.
Dude, did we lose a lot of animals, like millions and millions of animals?
I've been seeing these counts from Australia. I never recall hearing a number from the car fires.
Yeah,
a 1.5 million or something. I mean, this is the kind of thing of our environment is in such a fragile state that when you have a natural disaster on this scale, especially on a continent like Australia that's already kind of closed off, a closed system anyways, this, with the fragile state of the economy and a devastation at this level, this is the kind of thing where people fear like it ain't going to come back. Like this is a permanent scar on the wildlife mass in Australia, the biomass there. So Australia's definitely suffering, and I think it's a bellwether for the entire world. On that happy note, let's roll on a couple of emails here that have come in during the week. All right, this is from listener Lights Are On, Lights Are On, regarding Devil's Slide. Lights Are On. Right. Every year, it seems we have at least one car go off the road in Devil's Slide. Wasn't the tunnel supposed to make things safer through that stretch of road? Actually, no. I think the impetus of the tunnel was that Highway 1 kept getting closed because of landslide. It kept being closed. I think that's why they...
Yeah.
I mean, safety is kind of a extra benefit, but I think it was the fact that it kept getting closed.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the tunnel doesn't stretch the entire length of that treacherous stretch of road, so tunnel or no tunnel, you're still going to have to navigate some windy stretches next to the cliff. So
are we thinking that car was an accident?
I mean, have you seen the video?
I've only seen a still frame. I just thought it's a train wreck that I don't really want to see, but all of a sudden up on my screen was here's the still frame.
Yeah.
I recognize it. It's a blue Lexus SUV. I thought, I know somebody's got one of those.
Well, here's an interesting thing about this. We're talking about the car that went off the cliff at Devil's Slide last week, 2 weeks ago now. I've seen the video. The speed, so it's driving in northbound, so it has to cross the southbound lane and the shoulder to launch itself. The speed at which it came across those lanes of traffic would indicate intent.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like a drift. It was a beeline with no braking.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be the first time.
So people are surmising suicide.
Mm-hmm.
But another interesting fact is no missing persons report has been filed.
I drove by there just about a week ago. There was like, I counted 11 sheriff's cars, a whole bunch of people just kind of looking down. And I thought, oh, okay, they're yanking it out. But I find it really amazing that there's no residual evidence that there was anybody there.
I know. Well, I think that really says something about probably what it's like under the surface of the water right at those cliffs. My guess is that there are lots of caverns and subterranean holes and pockets where, like, up above the water level even, where stuff gets pushed up there. And I bet there's a treasure trove of vehicles and other stuff down underneath those cliffs, wedged up underneath there where you can't get a diver in. I'm wondering why they haven't had some automated submersible down there. You know, I mean, that's what they need, right? I mean, we've got drones and stuff.
Cars float for a little bit. I mean, unless their windows were down, they do float. And you would think if this guy saw that, he would have pulled over and looked and seen the car at least floating for a couple minutes.
When we've had these situations, people report that they stop and they go to the side and they look over and there's nothing. I don't know if it's the distance, you know, it's 100 feet or 150 feet. Maybe the weight of the car and the speed causes it to go underwater immediately and it can't resurface.
I watched a lot of How to Get Out of This Situation, and as long as the glass doesn't... In fact, they said that you won't even be able to open your door.
You can't. That's why you have those tools to break the window.
Well, they said you're going to have to let the water in.
Yeah.
And then you can open your door.
Yep.
Or you can roll down the window and get out, because they said the electrical will work for a few minutes, depending on the car.
Well, this is why I still have a vehicle with crank windows. All righty then. Moving on, we've got another email. It's always a pleasure to me when I can crack up Mojo.
Yeah, today's the day.
All right, this is from listener SUP Boomer.
Sup, Boomer.
Sup, Boomer. Regarding Maverick. Sup, Boomer. Sup, Boomer writes, I read in the Half Moon Bay Review that a local college student is trying to gin up yet another surf contest at Mavericks. Against this person, but why does everybody have to monetize the wave? Why can't they just surf it or watch other people surf it and enjoy the grandeur?
Yeah, dig that.
I think the spirit of the wave is stronger than the power of money, and I'm rooting for the wave and hoping it stays free. Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing. I mean, why can't people just leave it alone? Why does there need to be a contest with money and TV and stuff? I think for some people there's a Mount Everest type of challenge to conquering the bigger and the biggest and the best, and then announcing or monetizing that achievement. Yeah. I mean, for some people it's like, you know, what's the point of achieving this if there's no fame and reward to it, you know?
Which kind of goes against
to me the spirit of Mavericks.
Some of the people I know that are like have millions and millions and millions, all they really think about is making another dollar. It's kind of like, hey, how can I flip this over and make another dollar out of it? It's kind of, maybe it's gambling. I don't know what it is.
Oh, that's interesting. So I think for some people, there's that kind of thing. I think for others, there's just I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's like the Seinfeld Michigan bottle deposit scam. There's got to be a way to turn a profit on this thing. There's got to be a way.
So you'll be surprised. Maybe not. But yeah. I never sat down and watched Seinfeld. I don't even know that episode. But I kind of like the concept of making money out of something that won't make money.
No, that's a sad thing to hear, Mojo.
Was that what was the guy's name? Costanza.
Oh, Costanza.
Yeah. Now that line I do know, but I don't know what.
Now you're of an age where you know where that riff is from. Costanza. Five men in.
Okay, got it. Right. Yeah. All right.
Deodorant or something.
Okay, here's one for you. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz.
Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah, just amazing, isn't it? I'd walk a mile for a... Do you know that one?
No,
you don't? I'd walk a mile for a camel.
A Hutmobile?
A camel. You know, you need to explain Hutmobile because you're going to get calls.
Right.
That really was a car, folks.
In the 20s. So I was poking Mojo there. Okay, it's a car from the
20s. From the 30s, 20s? Yeah. Wow.
Something way, way back in there, right?
Wow.
All right, let's, you know what? Here's a novel idea. Let's actually start the show. How about that? All right,
I think we already did.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Hopefully the switches are turned on. We're having a great time anyway.
We need our own little jingle. Not Frankenstein. It needs
I do love that song, but you're right.
Oh, it's good, but we need our own little, like, what they call a bumper, jingle coming in. Welcome back to, what is it called?
Coastal Windage.
Coastal Windage.
What is it called? What's on your paycheck? Come on. What's it called?
I have direct deposit. I never see the dough.
We need some marketing help here for Mojo. Right, we need a marketing tutor here.
Bendage with Windage.
Well, your son is a talented musician. Yeah, yeah, and you guys should work on
he's
that.
He's smart enough to stay away from us.
Yeah, right. Right. All right. Let's start. Sure. Let's get into some stuff. King Tides this weekend. Okay. King tides are the larger than normal waves. So they occur, that happen a few times a year. They occur, all right, here we're about to get technical, hang on. King tides occur when the aligned gravitational pull of the sun and the moon generate extreme waves that rise several feet higher than usual. So that happens a few times. It's always fun to watch here on the coast side because we get some spectacular wave action, which then does some spectacular erosion. And here's the thing that people have been saying about king tides the last few years, that this is really a preview of the future of sea level rise. The damage that king tides do, the heights that they are getting now, mm-hmm. the encroachment upon shore, that the distances they're coming in now, this is the future. Get used to it.
So, I mean, what has changed?
Well, the polar ice caps are melting. So
they're saying there's more water in the ocean.
Yeah, the sea level is rising because of that, exactly. So these King Tides event, it's kind of like Mavericks. This is now a viewing event. There's viewing events all up and down the state this weekend for these King Tides. So I went and looked on the Coastal Commission's website. They have a California King Tides project page that lists all the official events for this weekend. There's only one official event in San Mateo County, and it's on the bay side. It's at Saturday at Oyster Point Marina in South San Francisco at 11 a.m. It's a nature walk. Nothing out here on the coast. I guess you just walk out and do your own event.
Why don't we give away some tickets to go see the King Tide?
Okay, right. The next caller gets two free tickets to walk out their front door. Okay, that's on us.
All the King Tide you can eat.
Yep. You know what? Any caller that calls, we'll give those away. The next round of high tides is expected February 8th and 9th. It happens a few times a year. Folks, it's amazing, but this kind of goes without saying, and yet I feel like we need to say it. Please use extreme caution. Okay, last weekend, not even King Tides, but last weekend, a woman and her dog almost drowned at Cowell Beach. That was in the paper. We got the riptides. Never turn your back on the ocean, right? That's the motto.
So did the dog go in and then she went and tried to save the dog?
They were both in and then the dog was struggling. And so she went further out to help the dog. And
yeah, that's what happened.
I feel like that exact scenario happened in Montero. It happened mm-hmm. in Montero Beach 2 years ago and the woman died. The woman died. So yeah. Duke Kahanamoko, do you know Duke Kahanamoko?
The surfer?
Yes.
Yeah.
The man, right.
Right.
The guy.
What?
He helped popularize the motto, never turn your back on the ocean.
Oh, and that's So true.
Yeah, his reasons on that were twofold. Yeah. One, there's always going to be a rogue wave or something. The ocean is an unpredictable, powerful force. Don't discount it. Don't take it lightly. Always keep your eye on it. And then the other thing, don't turn your back on it. He wanted people to show respect for you.
Yeah, those just metaphorically. Yeah. Don't miss it. Yeah.
Wow. Huge turnout at the MCC. The Mid-Coast Community Council is the elected advisory body to the San Mateo County Board of Supervisors, representing the five unincorporated Mid-Coast communities of Princeton, Moss Beach, El Granada, Miramar, and Montera. And so they have meetings twice a week, Wednesdays at 7 p.m., second and fourth Wednesdays of each month. So this past Wednesday, and there's usually, I've been to many of these meetings, there's anywhere from 3 to 15 people. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have 15 to 20 people there, that is a full house, just a massive meeting. It must be some huge thing. At the meeting on Wednesday, there was more than 150 people there.
Wow.
The most amount of people anybody can ever remember. The entire room, the room capacity is about 50. That fire marshal, please turn your volume down right now. There was probably close to 80 to 100 people maybe in the room. Standing room only, people sitting on the floor, children as young as 4 sitting quietly in the well of the meeting room. A line out the door, it's on the 3rd floor, out the door, down 3 flights of steps, out onto the sidewalk out in front, and going in both directions down the sidewalk.
Just so I can get a visual, where is this building?
This is on Alhambra, just up the hill from the beverage.
Okay, it's kind of a 3-story gray building. Yeah, where you vote. We can, if you live there. Okay, got it.
Right.
Got it.
So it was an amazing turnout, and there were several reasons. It's kind of like the perfect storm of all these things together for to bring out all these people, probably the most ever in the history of the MCC. So Supervisor Don Horsley, District 3 Supervisor, our representative on the Board of Supervisors, was there. New County Parks Director Nicholas Calderon was there to talk about the pump track controversy, which we'll get to later in the show. There was folks there representing the dog community because the San Mateo County Parks Dog Committee is nearing completion of their pilot off-leash pilot program and about to make recommendations to the Park Commission about that. Resist Density was there with their followers to highlight the fact that the Planning Commission is about to change the subdivision ordinance for the property out in Moss Beach where they're proposing the affordable housing, Cypress Point, and then the pump track. So that's a lot of stuff, and this was, like I said, a perfect storm. These are the bicycle community, the dog community, and Resist Density are three strong advocacy groups here on the coast side, and they all turned out folks. And here's the thing, none of those issues were on the formal agenda, so all of those people were there to speak at the general public comment before the agenda of the meeting even really starts. So I've never seen anything like it here on the coast side for the MCC, and I've been to many, many MCC meetings. Okay.
So for myself, and I suppose some other folks, can you just give us a short description of what a pump track is?
We will get to pump track madness. We'll get to that in a few minutes of the show.
Right.
It's its own. That was really the majority of people were there for that.
Yeah, I know. I picture what it is, but I don't really know that I've been told specifically what a pump track is.
Okay.
If we're going to get to it, we'll get to it. All right.
That intern right there. Yes. This person's new. I don't know their number yet. Can you right now get me a Wikipedia definition of
pump track?
Okay. We'll get that after the break. Okay. What this showed, one of the things that this showed, this meeting, that is one, that when you hit the right buttons, this community turns out, and they are passionate.
Yeah.
Okay, but you got to hit the right buttons, and all the right buttons were hit Wednesday night, and the community was there. That showed that. One thing it really showed, though, was a need for a actual community center for the Midcoast, because this is a ridiculous room that has different little niches in it. You can only get 50. There was 150 people came on a Wednesday night. And it was kind of misty that night, too. Mm-hmm. Standing out on the sidewalk in the mist, can't hear anything, can't hear what's being said. can't even get into the room to hear or be heard. And that kind of goes against the idea of democracy and public participation. So we need a single community center in the Midcoast, not separate kind of clubhouses like these special districts. The fire station has their new building with some meeting rooms in there. The Harbor District wants a new office with some meeting rooms. So, but now we're going to have this, you know, little meeting rooms for each special district instead of all getting together and finding some way to have one large community center where everybody can meet. And if we ever have a situation like this in the future, everybody can get in the room and hear and be heard. This need was mentioned a few times during the meeting itself, and Supervisor Horsley responded by saying that the county is aware of this need and is actually looking at a specific piece of property for this purpose. This is the first time I've heard this, and I personally have gone to Supervisor Horsley and proposed different ideas for a community center. A couple years ago, I suggested that the old Montera Grammar School on 5th Street in Montera, an incredible building, I think it was built in 1912, the original grammar school there. It's now kind of a dance studio, but it's this huge building that's for sale and has been for sale for a couple years. I suggested the county buy that, but Supervisor Horsley said that it'd be too expensive for the retrofitting. But we need something. Mm-hmm. We got to have something, and this meeting really highlighted that. Just an update on the Heritage Main Street situation and the Parklet pilot project. So in a unanimous vote, a special meeting on December 5th, the Half Moon Bay City Council voted to change the zoning code for Main Street with an urgency interim ordinance that goes into effect immediately and puts restrictions on what kind of businesses can be on the first floor of buildings on Main Street, from the bridge at Pillar Cedars Creek, four blocks down to Correa Street, where the Bank of America is. People are referring to this as the caramelization of Half Moon Bay, putting the needs of residents in conflict with the needs of visitors. One aspect of this is we've talked about this for a couple of shows, a parklet pilot project where they're going to take away three parking spaces out on Main Street and put in a little sidewalk cafe on the asphalt out in the street that includes benches, chairs, planters out in the street. And so the city is considering this pilot project and whether they want to go forward with that. So on Tuesday, January 14th at 7 p.m. at the Emergency Operations Center at 537 Kelly Avenue, the Half Moon Bay Planning Commission is going to hold a public meeting regarding the parklet pilot projects. If you have thoughts about sitting, taking up parking spaces or sitting out on the asphalt, drinking your tea, or you want to do that, you don't want to do that, you think it's a good idea or not, January 14th, 7 p.m., Emergency Operations Center, go there and speak your mind on that. All right, what else we got? So every month, our local comedy improv troupe, professional comedy improv troupe, these folks get paid and they go all over the state performing. But every month, they have a show here in Half Moon Bay at Fit Studio and Shoreline Station. This is Blue Blanket Improv. And their monthly show is this Saturday at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. $15 for adults, $10 for kids 12 and under. Every single penny that Blue Blanket Improv makes goes to the Half Moon Bay High School Drama Club and the BBI High School Scholarship, the Blue Blanket Improv High School Scholarship. They've donated more than $20,000 to these two entities since 2007. It's an all-ages show. There's no cursing. There's no body topics. It's different every time because it's improv. It's based on audience suggestion. And special exclusive offer. The first caller this morning gets a BBI Blue Blanket Improv VIP package, which includes two premium seating tickets and free parking. Okay, all you got to do is call in 560-9851. And you are going to Blue Blanket Improv Show this weekend. Okay, for once, and somehow, and I don't know how this is happening, we are on schedule with the show. Mojo, let's, you know what? Let's go ahead and do our commercial break.
All right.
We'll come back, and we're going to get into, hopefully we'll have that pump track definition, and we are going to get into pump track madness. When we cut back, set your dial, get your phone ready, 560-9851. Coastal Windage is coming back with some pump track madness right after this.
My name is Frank Vento. I'm a realtor and a certified residential specialist. There are many realtors in the area, so why should you consider letting me be the one to help you buy or sell your home? Well, for one thing, I know the Coastside. I grew up here, went to school here, got married here, and continue to live here. I know the market, and I'm loyal to my clients, perhaps even to a fault. I will always tell you the truth, no sugarcoating, but that doesn't mean I won't give you 100% when it comes to dependable service that meets your needs. I would love to talk to you about your real estate needs. My number is 888-9900. That's 888-9900. Or visit me online at frankvento.com. That's Frank, V-E-N-T-O.com.
BRE license number 01321362.
This is Bibi of New Leaf Community Markets, and I would like to tell you about one of the many fine coffees New Leaf carries. It's Outland Java, the only fresh organic coffee locally roasted. Outland Java coffee is certified organic and fair trade. They have a wonderful selection, including Mocha Java. You really must give it a try. It's delicious, full-bodied coffee with hints of wine, flowers, and fresh fruit. It is rich, complex, and smooth. The dry-processed, unwashed beans deliver the full range of flavors. Only $8.99 in the New Leaf coffee aisle. See the wide selection of great organic Outland Java coffees locally roasted. That's Outland Java coffee in the New Leaf coffee aisle.
Hello, fellow Coastsiders. My name is Dan Miller, your local independent AMSOIL dealer. AMSOIL is the first certified, fully synthetic engine oil manufactured in the United States. Pioneered and developed over 45 years ago, still the best and still manufactured in the U.S. of A.
This is Bob Kay with BK Motors. My dad introduced me to AMSOIL 20 years ago. I still use it today in all my personal vehicles. AMSOIL is the best there is.
AMSOIL is available at Half Moon Bay, at James Ford, Bill's Tire and Auto, Paul's Auto Care, and Professional Auto Care, your Coastside Volvo specialist. You need the best protection for and longevity from your cars, trucks, motorcycles, and boats. Choose AMSOIL, the first in synthetics. For more information, please click on the AMSOIL link on the KHMB radio website. AMSOIL, the first in synthetics.
Okay, and we're back. Reuben Truthmaker here with Mr. Mojo Filters on Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, and what the coast is talking about. I mean, at least the Mid-Coast, there's only one thing that the Mid-Coast has been talking about since about Sunday, and that is the pump track. The pump track. So, this was the main event at Wednesday's MCC meeting, the generator for most of the people attending. And that was to make public comment on the county's intent to demolish the bicycle pump track that was built on-site in Quarry Park with natural materials. There's no lumber, there's no nails, there's no other foreign substances. It's just dirt and pieces of tree left over from the fuel reduction work done in Quarry Park.
So is this where you're going to explain what the pump track
we're
is?
We're getting there. Yeah.
I can tell it's made out of dirt. It's for bicycles.
Slowly making my way there. Anyways, this bicycle pump track was built on-site with local materials over the two-week holiday break by local adults and children with hand tools. So no tractors, just shovels, rakes, tampers, Pulaskis, maybe. And the reason that these folks spent their break building this track is because for several years, residents of the Mid-Coast, specifically in El Granada, have been advocating for a public bicycle pump track, specifically in Quarry Park. Now, what is a pump track? Okay, hold on.
Okay.
Here we go. This is from Wikipedia. Pump track, a circuit of rollers, banked turns, and features designed to be ridden completely by riders pumping, that is generating momentum by up and down body movements, kind of like when you go on a swing, mm-hmm, pump your, mm-hmm, legs. Mm-hmm. So when you ride a bicycle pump, mm-hmm, track, once you get started, if you're good enough, you don't even have to pedal. You go up and down these obstacles, and you use that up and down gravity and momentum and the pumping action to propel you into the next obstacle, which then gives you more momentum from the pumping action.
So how is that different than BMX?
The tracks look very similar, and you can get air off of some of these obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
They do look very similar, and the best bike to ride a pump track on is a BMX bike.
Okay.
Pump tracks are excellent for learning the basics of balance, and especially this pumping action. When you go out on a trail on a mountain bike, if you have pumping skills, it really, the ability to maintain momentum or even increase momentum without pedaling really increases your efficiency and allows you to spend your time and energy navigating through the obstacles as opposed to pedaling. When you're pedaling and trying to see through obstacles, sometimes your vision gets a little blurry. The pumping skill that you get from riding a pump track is a critical cycling skill, and that's why pump tracks are great for young riders.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. What's the age, you know, younger riders?
Yes, kids as kids on push bikes, right? Bikes that don't even have pedals that kids just straddle, and the little kids that push could
really?
Potentially ride on this track. Bike would be a tough.
Do they wear helmets?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, I'm just trying to picture this.
You definitely wear helmets. Anyway, so the community built this track. Unfortunately, they built it without permission, without permit. It's
kind of like some of those properties I know down there by the beach.
Right. I mean, here's the thing. Why did this happen? Because citizens have dutifully participated in the process, in air quotes, process being through county parks, the Quarry Park Master Plan. County Parks has said, okay, we'll entertain the idea of a pump track, but we can't do anything until there's a master plan for Quarry Park. Well, this has been in the process for years. We've had multiple public meetings at El Granada Elementary, attended by many people in the community, in which various features for Quarry Park were discussed, including a pump track, where to put it. But there's no consensus, and the last public draft review of the Quarry Park Master Plan was made public in March 2018, almost 2 years ago. And the county position is that nothing can be built until the master plan is in place. Oh, and then also once it's in place, deferred maintenance will have to be taken care of. Then they can get to starting building stuff, which means we are legally and officially years out from ever seeing
But you're saying the county gets final approval, but this is not part of the county. I mean, these are unincorporated.
Oh, no. Quarry Park is a county park. It's a county park.
But it's in El Granada, is it not?
It is.
El Granada's an unincorporated town.
Which falls under the county jurisdiction, which is and there is a county park.
So
if
El Granada, like, could Half Moon Bay build it without having to ask permission?
Not from the county. Half Moon Bay would have to go through its own planning department.
Okay.
And get authorization.
So if El Granada was incorporated, they wouldn't have to ask the county.
Right. Although it's a county park, so in that sense, even if El Granada was incorporated and this county park was within El Granada, it's county park property, so county would have authority over that.
All right.
So incorporation would not solve this problem, and county does have jurisdiction here. The Granada Community Services District even has a pump track subcommittee as part of their parks committee to try to get this to happen, but the county's position is that nothing can be built in Quarry Park without the master plan. And so people have just had it. And they took matters into their own hands.
Well, and good on you for doing that. Because honestly, you know, your kids are only going to be young for so long. And then they're going to grow out of it.
Right. So, I mean, that's what I've been saying for years is, you know, I've been marking the countdown. My son's 5, my son's 6, my son's 7. There's nothing.
Now he's driving a car.
Now he's a teenager, looking at driving, at which point he's not going to want to do stuff in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So the window has almost been missed for my child. But as people said at the meeting, people before me were working for something and got nothing. I'm working for something and, you know, so far nothing. But now I'm working for the next people's kids because there has to be something. We have the skate ramp now. There's at least something now.
Yeah,
so,
I do like that.
And now if we could get a pump track. So Sunday I was riding my bike up the hill through Quarry Park, heading towards the top, up towards Scarper's Peak. And I noticed a ton of people down at the bottom at Murata East. I mean, 20, 30, 40 people, and in like an ant line of small children on bikes. And I thought, is there like some kind of tour group that's coming through? No, it was. And then I got closer. I recognized several kids and parents. It was kids riding this track that had just been kind of completed. So I continued on my way, came back later that evening when it was dark, and mm-hmm. rode the track. Mm-hmm. I have a light for mm-hmm. riding at night. Rode the track. Incredible track. A ton of features on this track. Quite lengthy. Wraps around trees. I mean, just really, really fun to ride, and a lot of technical skill can be built for it. Okay. So that sounded great. I told my son, let's go ride it next weekend. He said, great. Tuesday morning, I get a text from a friend of mine saying that County Parks is staging at Murata East with the intent to demolish the pump track. This is at 9 a.m. Tuesday. So I loaded up the KHMB news wagon and headed over there. And sure enough, there was about 10 County Parks employees in uniform, 7 vehicles, including a dump truck and a backhoe on a trailer. County Parks were standing around. Myself and a couple other residents, you know, were waiting, standing around with them, chatting with the Rangers. You know, is there any way that this could be stopped? And the Rangers said, no, this is above our pay grade. We're waiting for the County Parks Director, a new County Parks Director, Nicholas Calderon. And he showed up about 11, and he walked around with a small group of citizens, including Michelle Dragony of Coastside Buzz. Go to coastsidebuzz.com for some really good reporting on this issue. I don't think there's anything in the Half Moon Bay Review yet, but coastside.buzz has some info on this. Anyways, Director Calderon walked around with Michelle and a few other folks. He listened to them intently, walked the track with them. They were asking him to not demolish the track today. Is there any way we can work this out? And his position was no. There's nothing that can be done. But to his credit, he listened. And despite great trepidation, you could see it on his face. Like, he's new in this job. He's trying to follow the rules. This is an unpermitted illegal installation, and by the rules, he can't be allowed to stand. But he could see the passion in the people's voices and faces. And so despite his great trepidation, he agreed to stay the demolition until after Wednesday night's MCC meeting, in order to allow the public a chance to have their voice heard. And also, Supervisor Horsley intended to attend the meeting, and so he would also be able to weigh in and hear people's comments. So that's where it stood. So hats off to the local citizens who showed up to advocate to keep the track. Hats off to Director Calderon for being brave enough to follow his heart, as opposed to, you know, the spirit of the law, as opposed to the letter of the law.
Appreciate that.
So at the MCC meeting, like I said, there was a couple of hundred people there, 100 people in the main meeting room. Because there were so many people, only about 7 or so people had an opportunity to speak on behalf of the pump track, because there's so many people to speak on a variety of issues. Michelle Dragony had a great public comment in which she kind of went through each of the obstacles or problems that the county said that they would have with keeping this existing pump truck, why they couldn't keep it. And she kind of went through each one with a credible solution to each one. I mean, it was really an impressive. And she has that exchange, the problems and the solutions on her website, coastsidebuzz.com. Go check that out. It's really excellent. And you see that there are ways to do this. That these are not insurmountable problems. Another great speaker was Cunha Intermediate School teacher PJ Monica, who teaches what's called the wheel class.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Monica?
Yeah, Mr. Monica. Yeah,
yeah, he teaches the kids how to work on bikes.
Exactly. Part of his wheel class is bicycle maintenance.
Yeah, okay, I know that guy.
So he has had about 100 kids that he put through this bicycle maintenance course.
Yeah.
He had a stack of letters from his 6th grade class wrote about this.
Oh, sweet.
And he read a couple of those. I talked to a member of the MCC, and she said she read the entire packet, and as you would expect, incredibly moving, irresistible in the sense of the innocence and the exuberance of youth, and all they want is to ride on dirt, their bikes on dirt. I mean, how can you say no to that? Mm. And yet, The county's position, as stated by Director Calderon that night, Wednesday night, is the pump track cannot stay. It was built without permission, without permit. It's a liability issue, and the county maintains it's an unfavorable location. As Michelle pointed out, the liability issue can be overcome. It's not actually an issue. Unfavorable location, I personally dispute that. I don't think the county provided any credible information that there's a problem with the location. But what is unassailable fact is that it was built without permit and without permission. It was illegally installed. There's no disputing that. But but we need to rise above that. Okay. But now it's there, and now we're at a different decision point. We're not at a decision point of whether to build one or not. It has been built. We are now have to move beyond that. Should we keep what's there? It's been built. So now what the community wants is now just make it official. Figure out it's there now. Figure out a way to incorporate it in. Why do we need to demo and start all over again? Okay. So the county made – that's what the public wants. The county feels that they can't do that. They made this counterproposal. Director Calderon stated that within the next 4 weeks, County Parks will launch a public process for designing a permanent track for Quarry Park. And within a year, the track will be designed, properly permitted, built, and online. Well, that sounds good, but you know, people are like, but there's a track there now. We want to ride now. We can now. It's there now. Why demo and wait a year? You know, the legal argument doesn't hold water with folks who are looking at something in their community that you built with their own hands. It's there now. So, and I totally get that. And how could you not? So, public wasn't buying that. Director Calderon tried to hold to his position of it's illegal. We got to pull it out. The public was able to extract this further concession, and that is that, okay, in this one-year plan, the pump track development will be uncoupled from the Quarry Park master plan, that the two will go forward on separate tracks with this one-year fast-tracking for the pump track, and the Quarry Park master plan will be on its own track, and it'll take however long it takes. That is a monumental concession. Because heretofore, the county's position has been, we can't even put a sign into Quarry Park until there's a master plan to help us know where to put the signs and what we're going to do there. So that is huge. However, he maintains that the existing track must be immediately demolished.
How did the powers that be find out about it to go take it out? How did they even know?
Well, so there's county parks employees there all the time, and so this was one of the things that kind of irked people is county parks employees, rangers, watched them construct this over 2 weeks. It took them 2 weeks, and they had tools out there every day. They saw it happening, and it was allowed to happen. And then Sunday, when it was completed and people started to ride it, county parks rangers came in, shut down the trail, put up signs saying you can't use it, kick people off the trail, wouldn't let them ride it. And then Tuesday, and this is where the community just really felt it was kind of a betrayal. Tuesday, the first day that everybody's back in school and back at work, they were going to rip it out with no public notice, and people were just going to show up that evening or on the weekend, and it would be destroyed. So, again, Director Calderon bravely decided to go against his instinct, which was to follow the rules and stay the demolition. You know, like,
yeah.
So the upshot is the public wasn't buying that one-year deal. There's got to be a way. Director Calderon and Supervisor Horsley listened. They tried to state their position. The public wasn't buying it. The supervisor and director listened more. At the end of the meeting, Supervisor Horsley made this concession. He said, okay, it will remain closed for use, but we will not demo it. I want 3 weeks to personally come out and look at it, walk the track, talk to locals, and figure out if there's a way that we can go forward on this. There's going to be, folks, listen to this, put this in your calendar. There's going to be a special MCC meeting on January 29th, 7 p.m. at the meeting room, GCSD meeting room in El Granada. in which Supervisor Horsley and Director Calderon will discuss their decision on this.
Do we know what day of the week that is?
That's a Wednesday.
Okay.
Wednesday the 29th.
All right. So there you go.
Everybody be there, and we'll find out what's going to happen. In the meantime, members of the community will be meeting with Supervisor Horsley and Director Calderon to see if there's a way to move forward on this. Let's hope for the best. This is what I have been telling my son, who is very disappointed. It's still there. And as long as it's there, the pump track is there, it's still there. So it was supposed to be gone Tuesday. It's still there Wednesday. It was supposed to be gone Thursday morning. It's still there now. We shall see what we shall see. Let's keep fingers crossed. And we'll check back on, February 1st, I guess. No, January 31st. Our coastal windage, we will be reporting what happened at that January 29th MCC meeting. Okay. All right. So let's see. Where are we?
That's a lot.
I know. Well, there was even more. But one thing you want to do if you're interested in this, go to Pacific Coast Television. They televise, they video record all of the MCC meetings. And after a couple of days, they post it on Pacific Coast TV. Go to that website. Watch it for free. You can see the MCC meeting, see the public comment, see what Supervisor Horsley and Director Calderon had to say, and be
now,
more informed.
Is that a .tv or is it a .com?
I think it's .com, but
is
I
it, all right. Well,
just type in Pacific Coast TV in your browser, and you'll be returned to that. Okay. This is the time when we usually take emails. I'm being told by our email intern that we have how many? We'll count them. Okay, just count.
1,005.
18. We have 18 emails already about the pump track. That's really too many right now. So, but that's an impressive number. So 18 emails about the pump track already. No phone calls yet, 560-9851. But this is a program that people really enjoy emailing to for some reason. But you can call 560-9851. We'll look at those emails and maybe read a couple of them next week. Okay, because right now we got to get to YY, Little Free Libraries. You know what the Little Free Libraries are?
I see them all the time. Yeah.
Right, okay, so there's these little, like bookcases basically, like, you know, cabinets that people set up in their front yard that have books in them. And you can, you know, it's kind of like when you go to a one of these hotels where they have, you know, it's usually like kind of a rural hotel that maybe doesn't have TV or something. You've got a bookshelf where you can take a book and, you know, read one and take it with you on your trip after you leave that place. Well, these are little cabinets that have books in them, and you can take a book or leave one if you want. And it's kind of nice. I love reading, and so any kinds of stuff, fiction, nonfiction, history, you know, novels, whatever. And so I'm intrigued by every one of these little libraries. I love just looking and seeing what's in there.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but here's the thing. It's a great idea in theory. I love them. I look in every one. Founder Todd Bowl built the first Little Free Library as a tribute to his mother. And his original goal was to create 2,510 little libraries. Why that number? That
seems
like an odd number.
Where is he from?
I'm going to say back east. That's a good question.
Curious,
don't know. He wanted to establish, he had a goal of establishing 2,510 little libraries. It seems like a really random number. But the reason he chose that number is he wanted to surpass the number of libraries founded by Andrew Carnegie.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice. That's a goal.
That is a goal, but but it's a somewhat kind of disrespectful. I mean, a little library, but compared to a Carnegie library, I mean, Carnegie libraries are not just a library and a trailer at the back lot of, you know, a county property or something. Carnegie libraries are incredible facilities. The Carnegie Library in New York City is like this famous, it's in all kinds of movies and stuff. These are amazing.
You're overthinking his idea. He just picked a number, and that's what he went with. I mean, he could have picked.
I know. But, I mean, come on. Like, okay, you know, you're comparing a little cabinet out of your front yard.
You are comparing.
I know.
You're apples and orange in it.
Okay. All right. That's why we have Mojo here, to reset when Truthmaker gets off the rails. And I think I speaking of Andrew Carnegie, I think I got off the rails a little bit there. Okay. In my opinion, it's not an equal comparison, but Mojo says I'm operating on the wrong plane, and that could definitely be true. Currently, there are 90,000 of these little libraries in over 91 countries, and Little Free Library is actually a registered nonprofit. Here's an interesting thing. You can go to littlefreelibrary.org and view a map of all the registered little libraries in the entire world. I looked it up in my neighborhood. There's two official libraries registered in El Granada. Now, you don't have to register them. There's tons of unregistered ones, right? But apparently, if you want to get on the directory and have people be able to find your little library, you can register it at littlefreelibrary.org. So there's two officially registered libraries in El Granada.
But I know there's more. I mean, unless you're... Yeah, I mean, I know where two are right now.
Right. Now, here's the thing about Little Free Libraries, that way we would say why. It's kind of like a gym membership. Okay, you get all excited about, I'm going to have a Little Free Library in my front yard. It's cool. There's websites now where you can buy the cabinet. You can contract companies to come and set it up for you.
You can do it yourself.
You can do it yourself,
like
right.
Most people do.
So you get all excited about getting one, and you put it in your yard, and you stock it with books, but... Kind of like a gym membership. After that first month, the spark fades a little, and then you not checking on the cabinet as often, and it falls into disrepair. And what I've found in many of the little libraries that I look in is they're not really maintained or kept curated, culled, and current. So this is kind of what I see in every little library that I look in, and I look in pretty much all of them. The same kind of collection of books. There's always a couple of absolutely trashy airport novels, you know, like some conspiracy theory of Russians and aliens and, you know, breathless spy thriller trash airport novel. There's a smattering of kids' books, you know, for 4 or 5 year olds, kids learning to read. 2 or 3 trash pamphlets from like the Jehovah's Witnesses or something. And a bunch of self-help type books that nobody ever reads, which is why they wash up in little libraries. Possibly a ridiculous classic like Hamlet or Wuthering Heights that someone like me has maybe discarded in there. This is what is in every little library. And sometimes there's a majority of self-help books or a majority of kids' books. They're not kept well curated. I talked to one of the people who has one of the registered little libraries in El Granada. And he said, yeah, it's hard because people kind of see him as a dumping ground. He said there was a lady that was moving out of town, and he caught her, like, trying to dump off 2 boxes of books into his library, just stuffing them in there. But folks, it's not your dumping ground. You know, it's not a garage sale thing. If you've got a book that you think somebody would be interested in reading, take it on your walk with you to the post office and put it in a little library. Don't take a box of books and foist them off on somebody else. That's what leads to a little library that becomes kind of uncurrent or uncurated.
I just have to stick this in here because I read a lot. And I just came across a comment a lady had made on Reddit about hers. And she kept track of books in and books checked. And she must have been a librarian. She goes, I had over 100 checked out and over 100 donated. And that was just one. So I think that the benefit is way greater than any detriment. And I'm sure if somebody dumped a bunch of books, you know, the person that built the library will take them wherever they need to go. I mean, it's a shame that they just dump them there. But the fact that there's books out there, I mean, I hope it gives kids the idea that, hey, maybe these are something, not just this screen I have in my hand. Why are people carrying these books for hundreds of years, not on the screen? I like the libraries.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm kind of an old school guy, so books are fantastic. I have never read a book on a device, and I never will, and I love my books, and I have bookcases full of books, and some of them are old friends that I've had for 30 or 40 years that I've read several times. You know, so the books are special, and these little libraries, they really provide a lot of visual interest to the neighborhoods. They're decorated, they just really kind of give it that neighborhood feel. And some cities like Portland, Oregon have created special encroachment codes or setback or permit exemptions to allow these little libraries to be put up, because with coding and code and zoning and stuff, sometimes you can't put a structure in your front yard. So exceptions have been made. Also, they give neighborhoods with no real library something, some way for people to get books, like the Midcoast. As part of the deal struck between the county and the city of Half Moon Bay regarding the new fancy library built in the city of Half Moon Bay, as part of that deal, as part of the county financing, the Midcoast was precluding from having any library annex because annex staffing and other resources would have to come out of the Coastside pool, library funding pool. And it was decided that it would be best to pool all resources into one effort. Of course, that makes sense. But I just want to ask this theoretical question as we end the show, because there's been some talk. Harvey Rarback was at the FCC meeting asking about consolidation of the Midcoast and Half Moon Bay and how people felt about that. And there was some grumbling because it was mostly a Midcoast crowd. So it was decided to pool all the resources in the new library and the Midcoast would get nothing. That makes sense, but let's just say, for example, that this new library built mostly with county funds had been built on a piece of property in Princeton. Would Half Moon Bay have been fine with that? I don't know. I don't think so.
I really like where it sits right next to the school. It makes sense. That's perfect.
It makes sense, but wouldn't it be nice to have a library, San Mateo County Library Annex in El Granada or Moss Beach or something like that? But there's not enough money for that. So, thank goodness we have little libraries.
I mean, if you go in and you look at that library now, it's not just rows of books. It's really a place to go study, a place to go, a place to read, a place to meet, a place to do your homework. And you reserve it, but you get that space. I think it's about the space as much as it is about the book.
I mean, books, that's really a way down on the list of reasons to go to the library these days. It is a community center, basically.
Well, I had a discussion with my daughter the other day, and then I'll wrap this up quick. But yeah. I grew up in the middle of the country.
Yeah. Oklahoma.
And, right. And my degree was import-export. And although you can take a barge all the way up to where I'm from, not many, you know, they ship out, but not a lot of ships go into Oklahoma. But they can if they want to. But so I knew I had to move to the coast. I went to the library for about 2 weeks, and I picked up the Import-Export Directive, big, giant, thick book, and I wrote down 200 places, and I sent them letters. And I got a job.
At Vandalay Industries?
I work for Acme, you know that.
Vandalay Industries, if anybody's a Seinfeld fan, importer and exporter.
Yeah, me and the coyote, he's my best customer. He buys everything Acme makes.
Yeah, right, right. You got one of those. I need some roller skates and a big rocket.
Yeah, you got any dynamite? Yeah.
All right. Once again, Mojo and I are being allowed to have too much fun. Coastal Windage is really a lot of fun. Hopefully you had some fun today, too. If not, if you didn't get your fill of fun, guess what? We're doing it again next Friday at 9 a.m. Be here with us for Lili Keaton and Jenny Urban. We're going to do a Shooting the Breeze live interview about their program, Say Yes to the Dress. Be here next week. Libby will be here also. Have a great week. This has been Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.
Good night.